And as Arthur McLeod says, we hope you do believe that. Good morning, you're in tune to WPFW. And up next is Roach Brown with Crossroads Live from Ben's Chili Bowl. So I believe after 11 a.m. they are open. They will be doing 2 hours today. This is our monthly live broadcast from Ben's Chili Bowl. So you can see Roach and Martine and the gang down there. And you are in tune to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
A jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years. What?
Come on! I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice, that's what you find, just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. We come to you every Tuesday at the same time. The first Tuesday of each month, we come to you live for a two-hour broadcast, live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl here on historic U Street in Northwest D.C. We have an interesting show for you, as usual. And again, we want to say thank you for tuning in. My wife and I just got back from Martha's Vineyard. We was up there for a reparation conference with our distinguished co-host, Nikichi Taifa. And it was quite an experience going up to Martha's Vineyard. And one of the things I found out that folks were friendly. I was looking for all of the folks with the nose in the air and that kind of thing. There wasn't that. We didn't run into none of that. Everybody went out of their way to speak and be friendly. I've never felt that kind of vibe in another city. So we enjoyed being up in Martha's Vineyard in a place called Oak Bluff, which is a Black community that was started in the 1600s before slavery. And they have a well-known beach called Inkwell, a Black beach. And folk were there every morning doing yoga, polar bears swimming in the cold water. And folk would walk past you and say, how you doing today? You need something to eat or can I give you a ride? I never ran into that kind of friendliness. And it scared me. I'd never been treated that friendly before. Usually people holler at me and cuss me out. But folks up there were just real nice. So to Nikichi and to the folks who provided that reparation conference in Martha's Vineyard, thank you. It was an overwhelming success. We met a lot of interesting people. And thank you for including us, Nikichi. And she just joined us on the website. Good morning, Nikichi Taifa.
Good morning, Roach and Martine, and thank you so very much for coming out. It was absolutely phenomenal, but it was even greater as a result of y'all being there. Hey, hi, Kim.
Oh, you know Kim Haven too, Nikichi?
Oh, who doesn't know Kim? Hey,
Nikichi, you know everybody but the warden. How come you don't know the warden? You know everybody else?
It's all good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we always start off our show with what we call the grapevine, information you can use, the grapevine. The grapevine. Oh, I heard through the grapevine, but you know that I heard through the grapevine. Oh, I'm just about to lose my mind. Okay, the grapevine. All right, here we go. 1 in 5. Ending racial inequity and incarceration. 1 in 5 Black men born in 2001 is likely to experience imprisonment within their lifetime, a decline from 1 in 3 for those born in 1981. Pushback from policymakers threatened further progress in reducing racial inequity and incarceration. These private centers lack oversight. Cayuga County in Ohio, the judge sent kids there anyway. Courts are increasingly sending children to private youth care centers, spending millions while detention centers overcrowding persists. Oh, this is an ongoing problem. Concerned about overcrowded youth detention centers, Cayuga County juvenile court officials sought safer settings and a better path forward for kids. April Gordon agreed to offer such a place at her youth center, Life's Right Direction. Then her Facebook post came. Free ass whoopings and one lick from the cord could send them straight. Gordon wrote about the kids. She also posted offers to train others to make mega money by housing vulnerable children. A Marshall Project Cleveland investigation found that youth care centers operate with lax oversight from the Cayuga County Juvenile Court. No regular on-site inspections and no quarterly reports. And at the same time, success rates, whether a child completes the program without ending up back into the facility, doesn't matter. The Ohio Department of Youth Services in 1994 created RECLAIM, Reason and Equitable Community and Local Alternatives to the Incarceration of Minors, a program designed to curb overcrowding at juvenile detention centers and youth prisons and emphasize rehabilitation. Juvenile courts across Ohio receive funding from the state to pay for private placements as part of a program that provides financial incentives for courts if they keep the incarcerated youth population down. After Ohio set aside $1 million to create alternatives to juvenile detention in 2020, the number of placements in youth care centers soared in Cayuga County from 0 to 103 in less than 2 years. Pharmacies are giving your prescription data to police without a warrant. Following a congressional investigation, some lawmakers wrote a letter to the Department of Health and Human Services about how the 8 largest pharmacy chains provide patient prescription information to police without requiring a warrant, and only one regularly notifies customers when it discloses the private data. We learned that each year, law enforcement agencies secretly obtain the prescription records of thousands of Americans without a warrant. In many cases, pharmacies are handing over sensitive medical records without review by legal professionals. Amazon is the only company that notifies customers when this data is released, unless it is required not to by gag order. Although pharmacists are legally permitted to tell their customers about government demands for their data, most don't. Pharmacies can and should insist on a warrant and invite law enforcement agencies that insist on demanding patient medical records without a subpoena to go to court to enforce them. However, if some women may choose to travel to obtain an abortion in a state where it is legal, state-by-state regulations will fail to provide adequate protection for women. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Now we get to our topic. For the first hour, we're talking about should telephone calls be free for prisoners? And that's been a topic that we've been fighting for 35 years. And they named this after Miss Margaret Reed. She was a lady who was a grandmother who was blind. She couldn't write letters and she couldn't visit her grandson. So what she did was she'd been filing since the 1980s. She's no longer with us, but Miss Margaret Reed is a young lady who helped spearhead this, and I've been on a couple of cases in the 80s and in the 90s. This has been a 35-year fight for making phone calls free in America for those men and women inside of prison. And our guest this morning, who was on top of that, should telephone calls be free for those folk who are incarcerated in prison? And our guest is none other than the dynamic Kimberly Haven is not just a participant in the social justice movement. She is a dynamic force driving change as a recognized subject matter expert. Kimberly is in high demand as a speaker, addressing crucial topics like women in prison, women's reproductive justice, voting rights, democracy, collateral consequences, and conditions of confinement. She routinely consults with and collaborates with state and local elected officials and executives, sharing their invaluable insights on criminal justice issues. Good morning, Ms. Kimberly Haven, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Good morning, and thank you so much for having me. My bio, I'm listening to you read this, and I'm going, damn, she sounds impressive. And honestly, I do this work because it's the right thing to do, you know? Although I did make 2 notes about 2 bills that I now need to kind of think about pursuing, just so you know.
Well, we were still, and also joining us is our distinguished co-host, Miss Nikiche Taifa. Boy, this Nikiche is something else.
Right?
Everybody knows that she is all over and she's shaking the bushes on any issue that makes things better for those less fortunate and those in confinement. Thank you, Nikiche and Kimberly. Our topic is, should telephone calls be free for prisoners? Give us a rundown on this, the new situation that just came down where the FCC ruled to reduce the telephone rates for prisons and prisoners all across the country.
Well, the bottom line is, should telephone calls be free? Yes, that's just the bottom line.
Why should they be? Why should telephone calls for prisoners be free?
Because, again, you know, if we're looking at trying to find ways to break multi-generational incarceration, to treat people with dignity, to keep families intact, to just put humanity back in things, then we have the moral obligation to facilitate that. I have seen firsthand through my own incarceration the impact of being able to make phone calls from the moment of arrest through my incarceration preparing for release. But more importantly than that is that what has happened over, as you said, the decades that we have been fighting this is that telecom companies, correctional facilities, states, they've found another way to profit off of the phenomenon of incarceration. So they will get phone contracts, they will get telecom contracts with whoever is going to give them the biggest kickback, or let me not say kickback because that's a horrible word, but incentive to take their contracts. And it's all on the backs of families, families who generate somebody's books so that they can call home. That's a problem. And so it's just another way that we have found to strip humanity and dignity, that we have found a way to further traumatize the people that we have currently incarcerated, their family members and the community. And honestly, I applaud the FCC for doing this, but it is not enough. It does not go far enough.
It doesn't go far enough. I know that in prisons, one of the reasons why this is so hot, the telephone industry did $1.2 billion a year, and there's two companies that control it, Secaucus and their GTL. And the issue is that because of the closing of the prison in Lawton and for D.C. prisoners, we're sent all over the country, and it's too expensive to travel to Oklahoma, to Texas, or to Seattle, Washington, to visit your loved ones. So the only means of communication, or the main means of communication, is the telephone, and the prices that they're being charged is unreal all over the country. And it's necessary, like, as I said before, the young lady who helped spearhead this and been fighting before she passed away, it's been traumatic. So we need telephone calls to stay in touch. In fact, we just had a couple of friends on a month ago, Fox and Rob Richardson. They did the movie Time and Time Too, and the movie was nominated for Academy Award. They just left and went to Martha's Vineyard yesterday about this movie Time Too. And the father did 18 years in Angola, and she made sure that every week, two, three times a week, he called and spoke to his five sons on the telephone. They said the average man spends maybe like 4 hours a month with his kid. This gentleman who was in prison serving 60 years spent over 25 hours or 30 hours a month just talking to his kids. So the lifeline from prison to a telephone replaces, that's not the right word. They use that in regards to a face-to-face visit. So these telephone calls, a $1.4 billion business, and two companies control it, Secaucus and GTL. And these 1.4 billion people in telephone calls, what? And all of them get a kickback, or most of the prisons get a kickback, which means they get a commission. And a lot of the prisons are only going with those companies that give them a bigger percentage. This law or this rule that just came down the other day from the Federal Communications Commission. And I'm telling you, Kim, I've been to several meetings. We've had several GOAT shows in the last 16 years on bringing these phone call rates down, because it's breaking or devastating families and destroying the communication between loved ones. All phone calls from incarcerated people should be free.
Absolutely.
whether it's from a prison or a detention center or juvenile facility.
Well, and you pointed out something that I don't want to get lost, and that is, first of all, I know and I love Fox and Rich. They are just this amazing, incredible family. But what they were able to do to enable him to talk on a regular basis with his sons is demonstrated in their family life now. Like, I've had the opportunity to break bread with them, to hang out with them, to be in their space. The relationship between father and sons is incredible. Should it be that way if that had not happened? Maybe. Who knows? Kind of doubt it. But again, that just shows the power of that connection between somebody who is incarcerated and their children or their loved ones, their wife, their spouse, their partner, their whatever. And that's something that can't be understated.
You know, something else that came out of that this ruling from the FCC, and it's kind of scary. And I forgot exactly what I was trying to say. It'll come to me. Anyway, Nikichi, you want to jump in, Nikichi?
Yeah, let me jump in. Well, first of all, again, welcome, Kimberly, to Crossroads, the PFW. The question that I have is the issue of cell phones in prison. Let's put it this way. Upon information and belief, some people that I know might get phone calls from persons locked inside via cell phone. Are they legal in some institutions or not legal anywhere? Or just give me the rundown on that.
They are not legal anywhere. And the reason that they're not legal anywhere is because they presume that people are going to do nefarious things, which is why cell phones are such a hot financial commodity within institutions, and that they are guarded and protected if you have the ability to get one, because again, it's not regulated. So there's a lot of different, there's the legality piece of it and the presumption that people are going to commit bad acts. The second thing is they're also not making money on those cell phones. So I don't know of a single institution in this country where cell phones are legal.
What type of sanction do persons inside receive if they are caught with a cell phone?
They could lose, countless privileges. They could confinement or restrictive housing if they want to get cute with the words, but it's the same thing, solitary confinement. They can have all visits cut off. All phone calls and have to go back to snail mail, which would then be heavily monitored. There is no end to the sanctions that an institution can impose if you are caught in possession of a cell phone.
Okay, gotcha.
All right. You know, the other piece I had forgotten to slip my mind is that's this order that came down from the Federal Communications Commission putting a cap on these telephone rates. One of the things that I was really surprised to find out, Kim, is that they took the momentous step of prohibiting companies from paying most kickbacks or commissions. And that has been a caveat that attracted a lot of these big conglomerates to provide these telephone services. So the FCC also ruled and restricted prison telephone companies from giving kickbacks or commissions back to the institutions for allowing them to provide the telephone services for the inmate population. And we know that this is that's a momentous step, but they'll find a way around it. They call it kickback or commissions. They'll find another name for it to get around it. But this is a cash cow. Anytime you make $1.4 billion off of telephone calls yearly, and this has been going on for over 30-some years. So they are billionaires off of the prison telephone company. One of the things we've been pushing, Kim Haven, is that the kickbacks, since the FCC ruled that phone companies should not give kickbacks or commissions, we would like to say a percentage of all telephone calls should go into an inmate welfare fund to be distributed and used by those men and women being released from institutions, since they provided most of the money and the funds and the profit for those companies. But men and women are released from prison with $40, $50 or nothing, depending on what facilities you're being released from. But the telephone calls, the money from telephone calls should be distributed back to the inmate population since we made the money. We generated the funds, and them funds should be shared amongst the people who paid into that. What's your take on that?
Well, I would agree, but I would also, with the caveat, I guess. So I like the idea of, if you've made money off of my people, then you need to give back, right?
Yes.
But I'm also smart enough, and so are all your listeners, to know that even if you put it in an inmate welfare fund, it ain't going to be touched. It's not going to come back to the population. Or if it does, it comes in dribs and drabs, because they'll figure out some way to, they'll come some way to screw that and screw people.
Yeah.
I would much rather see maybe legislation building on this that could say every state has to do an audit and report out on those telecom costs. And also, let's not forget, because some institutions have tablets now, and tablets are the way of the future, right? But not everybody and not every jurisdiction has the ability to have tablets. There's caps on that as well. So if we're going to talk about those caps, then there needs to be some reporting mechanism by which these telecom companies and these states and local jails and prisons have to report out on how much money was expended, where that money went, and what it was used for. Because otherwise, there's no transparency, there's no accountability. And we know what happens. This is a great ruling. We're heralding it. It's a great success. But those of us, Roach, Nikichi, we've been in, Martine, we've been in this space a long time. We also know that when people stop looking and they're like, okay, we did this, so now we're under scrutiny, but now we're going to come back over here and we're going to do this. And oh yeah, that's the way we always did things. And things don't get reported out. So there's no transparency or accountability that we can actually say, this has not changed the family dynamics. It has not changed because of the passage of this ruling from the FCC.
Hmm. You know, what about, we're talking about phone calls. How did this impact video visit or video phone calls?
Same thing, there are caps.
Go ahead. You got it, Kim.
There are caps. There are caps on what they can charge.
Yeah, okay. But what mm-hmm. about using video visiting and teleconferences for those men and women who across the country can't see their families? The cap applies to the video visit as well as to regular phone calls that mm-hmm. is supposed to be a cap. You can't charge exorbitant prices. Is that your understanding?
Yes, that is also included in the FCC ruling. I mean, I have my own, you know, biases about the video conferencing, only not from the necessity of it, because to your point, when Lorton closed, DC sent everybody all over the country, right? And so yes. If that's the only way that you can actually look your family in the eye, then I absolutely support that. The problem that I have, and this became really evident in COVID, during COVID time, was that you're still not alone. You know, while I know that if I'm making a phone call to my loved one, my call's being recorded and potentially someone's going to listen to it. But I'm doing a video call and there's a CEO standing over my shoulder. So there's no level of privacy. There's no level of, you know, you can't show emotion. So there's no ability to be vulnerable. You know, when someone's standing
there, show emotions on the video calls. Is that what you're saying? What is that? That's the first I heard of that.
Oh, yeah. And it happened. I heard that from across the country, that when you were making a video call, there was a CEO standing right over top of your shoulder. Now, they're not supposed to be there. They're not supposed to listen. But if I'm talking to, let's say, my 3-year-old kid who is scared, he's having a bad day, he's crying, I'm going to respond. I'm going to cry. I don't want to show emotion or my vulnerability because there's a CEO, and it might be a CEO who likes me. It might be a CEO who can't stand me. And there were a couple, not going to lie. And I'm not going to show my vulnerability in front of them. And so that further complicates that. I think that one of the other things that people are not aware of, generally speaking, is that when you have the ability to make a phone call, whether it's a phone call, whether it's a video call, whether it's through a tablet, I have seen so many women who do homework with their kids. Like, it puts that sense of normalcy, to the extent that prison and prison communication can be normal. But I was witness to women calling home and having their kids say, I'm struggling with geometry. And I watched this happen. I've seen woman after woman go, hey, my kid's struggling with geometry. Can anybody help me? And people will step up and help that child do that homework. There were women who read bedtime stories to their children every single night, who said good morning to their children every single morning, who were able to have parent-teacher conferences with their children's school because they were able to make phone calls. But if you didn't have the money on your books and nobody was paying for your phone card, unless you got somebody who's willing to, you know, do a three-way, which they also frown on, you lose that ability. That's why this is such a monumental decision from the FCC, but it also does not go far enough.
But you know, in terms of the three-way, I thought that was actually prohibited.
It is. Yeah, okay. It still happens. I'm not going to lie. It still happens. Because again, you adapt. And three-way calls are an adaptive strategy.
Right.
Wow. Oh, you know, it's amazing in that the question is, the FCC's rule on putting the cap on prison telephone calls, is this for federal prisoners or state institutions?
Both.
Or both?
It's both. For both.
So no matter whether you're in a state facility or federal prison, you got a cap. In large prisons, it used to be 14 cent a minute. Now it's down to 6%, 6 cent. And they brought the rates all the way down. And part of it is that, and you say about the three-way phone calls, three-way phone calls that you just mentioned, a young lady needed help with her kid's homework, and she turned to somebody else. There's somebody on the phone you're talking to. They said, well, let me call my brother or sister who is a wizard in math, and you can communicate with them or plug them into the phone, and your kid need help immediately. So these kind of restrictions or extreme oversight over top of them, you're talking about somebody being in the room while you're on a video visit. They're recording the call. What the hell they need to be in the room with you before? Their presence is a chilling effect yes. on the visit. And it's making the kids apprehensive, you apprehensive. And yet they're recording the call. Why is the guard allowed to stay in the room while you're on the phone talking to your loved ones and the calls are recorded? So you can go back and listen to them, whatever was said. It's taken 33 years. And the young lady's name, I'm sorry, at the beginning was Martha Wright Reed. The grandmother, and she initiated this case, this whole lawsuit back in the late 70s and early 80s. And she was blind, couldn't read, disabled, and couldn't see her son, and couldn't travel. And her only form of communication was the telephone. And she was using the telephone money and for not buying her medicine or food to make sure she can talk to her grandson. Mm-hmm. So families are making all kinds of sacrifices, and folks who are listening to the show, I know half of you listening have received a phone call from a loved one or a friend from inside the institution. The phone number to call if you want to participate in this discussion is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. We want to hear from some of you who get phone calls and have spent a lot of money every month in making sure that the loved ones are in close contact with the folks who are incarcerated. Go ahead, Nikichi, you want to jump in?
Well, I guess the question I have, Kim, I know you were inside a while ago. I forgot exactly when. And we're talking about this issue of phones, but just in general, I'm just curious. What are some of the differences between when you were in, what was that, during the 90s? I'm not quite sure when it was.
I came home in 2015.
Oh, my God. That wasn't that long ago.
You came home in 2015?
Yeah, that was a whole, you know, I had to do it on the installment plan, you know.
Oh, okay, I got it.
Know what I'm talking about.
Emotional all about that, right,
Rose? I know all about the installment plan.
Malicious prosecution, just saying. But yeah, no, so 2015 is when I came home.
I didn't know, Kim,
you had another brush with these turkeys.
Yeah, they weren't through. So I want to say they weren't through with me yet, but the reality and the way I've kind of framed it just for my own mental health is that I had to go back and get reacquainted with the work and why the work was so important. And I came out, that's when I wrote the menstrual hygiene bill. That's when I wrote the pregnancy bill. That's when I wrote the ending solitary for pregnant women, because of the things that I saw during that 15 months that I was on the inside. And those were first in the nation laws. So yeah, I was fired up when I came home. So yes, I'm sorry, TG, I digressed.
Well, no. One of the questions that I have is, you know, as a result of the January 6th insurrection and a lot of right-wing people going to the institutions, you think that's going to engender any changes in any of these policies now that's beginning to affect and impact other people?
I don't know. I think that there is some possibilities to it. If they want to hold true to the reason that we monitor phone calls is because bad actors, you know, can commit bad acts, that's not going to change. But also, particularly with the January 6th insurrectionist, they're funded. So this isn't going to affect them one way or the other. Like, they're not suffering under not being able to make phone calls. They're not suffering, you know, to figure out, do I pay for my medication or do I make sure that my son, my daughter, my grandchild has money on their books to be able to call home to talk to family so that I can tell them what's going on with their lawyer, or that I heard from their lawyer, or they can tell me what's going on the inside and what they need. The January 6th folks, they ain't suffering.
They're certainly not.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're funded.
You know, one of the things, one of the questions I had, Kim, with this new ruling from the Federal Communications Commission is about in regards to the phone rates. What happens to those men and women who don't have money on their accounts? What allowances have been made for them to make phone calls to their loved ones? And they don't have no money to call anybody, don't have any money for people to come visit them in prison. And they're taken from Washington, D.C. to California to serve their time. And they can't communicate, and they have poor writing skills. So what's in this bill, or is anything in this bill for folk who don't have any funds to pay for the phone call?
No, that has not changed. And that's also part and parcel of the big problem that we have, that if you are indigent or your family doesn't put money on the books, this isn't going to impact you one way or the other. It might make it a little bit easier for your family, but is your family going to be the one that has to say, do I get my meds or do I put money on your card, on your phone card?
Okay, go ahead.
This is WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. 89.3 on your radio dial. WPFW, your station for jazz and justice.
Thank you. And you're listening to Crossroads. And on our guest this morning for the first hour, this is our two-hour broadcast. For the first hour, we're talking to Ms. Kimberly Haven. She's with Reproductive Justice Insider Program. We've been knowing Kim for over 15, 20. In fact, I met you with Eddie Ellis, when we all went over to San Francisco and visited Alcatraz. That was like 15, 18 years ago.
Longer.
And we've been friends ever since. And I'm glad to see that you're still on the front line and fighting. I am impressed with you and the Keech and all these folks. We've been knowing 20, 25, 30 years. And you're still doing the exact same work, making things better. There's another question that comes up for those men and women who are disabled, who are blind and can't hear or talk, and they're incarcerated. What arrangements are in this bill? Is anything in this bill to make sure that people who are handicapped have access to those latest devices that would allow them to communicate with their loved ones back at home?
Now, this was only for rates and what could be charged. But it is incumbent, and disability rights organizations, like I know Disability Rights Maryland, Disability Rights, the National Association, there's a bunch that are working aggressively to advocate for accommodations, because again, under the ADA, we have to make reasonable accommodations. And so that might be adaptive devices that have to be provided. They would still, if there was an adaptive, say, phone or a tablet or something else like that, then they would benefit from this FCC ruling. But that's a very completely different issue area that other advocates are really aggressively trying to ensure across the country.
Okay, the phones are open. You are able to call in. This is something, again, most people, I would say this, out of every 10 black males in America, 7 out of 10 have a criminal record or criminal conviction or been stopped or arrested by the police. So that means 70% of the black population has a direct relationship to and with the corrections, criminal justice, courts, and prison, etc. This kind of thing means that folks have.
Well, the call-in number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893.
We get it together this morning. This is one of them mornings that it just ain't clicking. I haven't had my Kool-Aid yet. You know what I mean? When I get my Kool-Aid, my morning starts off right.
Coffee.
Oh, you got yours. So again, folks get phone calls. We get calls all week, early in the morning, late at night, from all over the country, from men and women inside of prison, reaching out for help. And a lot of times they can't call their family because, again, there's no assistance. If a guy's family don't provide money, there's nothing in this bill or in the prison system that allow people who are broke, who don't have money, to make a call. What do these men and women do if you want to reach your loved ones? And even though they brought the rate down, the family don't even have the money for the existing rates. Now they reduce the rates and they're in trouble meeting these low rates. What do they do?
So I know that there are options within, but I would be loath to really believe every institution has a chaplain's office, right? They have a case manager. They have a social worker that you might be able to put in a request that says, I need to check in with my family. I need to call my grandmother. I got a letter that she's, dying or my husband's leaving me or it could be anything. And generally, I want to believe that institutions can accommodate that. And that's, you're sitting in somebody's office making a phone call. I know from my experience, I've seen chaplains step out of a room. I've seen social workers and case managers step out of the room to give you some modicum of privacy. Of course, they dial the number for you because, again, there's a whole trust thing. So, you can actually kind of do that, but it doesn't take the place of regular communication, like with Fox and Rich. Mm-hmm. Every month, there were parents every day who were reading bedtime stories or saying good morning. Those kinds of connections are crucial, not just to keeping that family bond strong and tight. I am so jealous that I am not in D.C. at Ben's Chili Bowl because I love Ben's Chili Bowl. Please, please, please have a chili dog for me because, anyway, I digress. But the other piece of it is that if you're talking about trying to break those cycles of trauma, it's already traumatic for children to be separated from parents. And so if all of a sudden kids go a month or two without talking, like they might get a letter from their mom, they might get a little package from inside, but it's not the same thing as being able to talk to mom and or dad, right? And so again, hearing that voice, and COVID really screwed things up because nobody in the institutions knew what was going on the outside. If you had TV, we all didn't know what was going on and we were outside, right? So then the cone of silence kind of goes over an institution. So if you can talk to your children, you have a couple of minutes because again, those rates were still really high. How do you allay their fears and their concerns about what's going on when A, you don't know, but also you have that, you have 30 seconds left. In 30 seconds left, how do you encourage your child? How do you find out what's going on the outside? How do you allay their concerns and their fears? And it's impossible. Phone calls, video calls, the tablets, all of that technology needs to be free. We know how to do it, but we got to take the profit out of it. We've got to take the mechanisms by which institutions and states and these telecom giants do some social responsibility. I'm going to call them out. Do social responsibility. Be a good steward because there's other ways that GTL and in everybody else is making money. Don't do it off of this.
Right. I go back to what we said previously. They're making $1.2 billion off of the phone calls from prisoners and to their families. Mm-hmm. And I've been pushing on this show, and to deposit a percentage of their profits as opposed to the money going back to the prison as a commission or a kickback. And you said again, I agree with you. Putting the money into the inmate welfare fund, we'll never see it because they use that money to buy baseball uniforms and hats and caps for the guards' sons and daughters. So most of the money in the inmate welfare goes for cookouts, picnics, and barbecues, T-shirts for the guards and their families. Yet this is our money that's generated from our families, and they're doing $1.2 billion or more. Percentage of that money should go into some kind of fund for what I call gate money. They call it gratuitous money. When you leave prison, you're supposed to get a small allotment of 20, 30, 50, 100, depending on where you are. But if you got some money in your account, you can have $25 in your account. They would not give you the gate money or the gratuitous money to go out. And also, I'm concerned about these debit cards or these phone cards, the rates. There's these rates of 50 because they charge you a fee for signing up for your money laying in this account for a period of time and not being used, and they withdraw your money. So all these little tricks they use to take your money, besides the phone call, when you pay money into your account, that's a fee. And if your money stayed there for a certain period of time, they deduct a percentage of that, even though you haven't used that money to make a phone call. So does this rule from the FCC putting a cap on these prison telephone rates have anything in the bill that would address those particular issues?
No.
So no. What do we do?
Well, that's a whole other industry that needs tighter regulation that's separate apart from the FCC. But one of the things that occurs to me as I've been thinking about this over since the FCC ruling was announced is that I support the gate money, except for the fact that, like you said, if I've got $19 in my account, I'm not getting gate money. That ain't happening. Yeah. And then they're going to give me a check, but I probably don't have an ID, so I'm not going to be able to go cash that check. So yeah, there you go. But what if we took that money? And again, we would have to, this is why the reporting mechanism is going to be so crucial, because then you could take that money and invest in programming that is going to set somebody up to be able to get a job in the telecom industry. Okay. Or in the coding industry, or the insert whatever here that is going to pay them a livable wage when they come home.
Yeah.
That's really what I would like to see. So this $1.4 billion, that's just insane. Take that $1.4 billion and be a good steward of it and invest in programming. And again, quality programming that is separate and aside from the rinse and repeat classes that happen inside the prisons, which are the only programs that happen, but invest in something that is going to have a long-term financial impact that is going to provide a means for economic mobility for the most vulnerable of our population. And those are the people coming home from prison.
You know, in our second hour this morning show, we're dealing with the homelessness.
As a
housing crisis for returning citizens. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that one of my sale partners suggested to me a long time ago that the money that if I stayed in 10 years and I spent or my family spent in excess of $10,000 in that 10 years that I was in prison for phone calls, and they have a record of it, a percentage of what you paid in for phone calls should be returned to you upon your release for housing and support services when you are released, because right now we got a crisis of men and women don't have a place to stay. So again, I'm hopping on. We've had on our show several times Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, but we had to get a couple more of them to see if we can get them to push this thing that we need some kind of percentage of that money that's coming down to these big corporations. They've been doing this for 30 years. If they made $1.2 million last year, and it's been going on for 30 years or better. Lady, the money they made is unbelievable. So it's a small price to pay to set some of that money aside to increase the gate money allotment or release money they give you and put some money in the and another thing, Kim, and we suggested, Kim, is that they put their money in the fund that we can get a loan or short-term loan or small $2,000-$3,000 release money when you come out. Because $50, you've been gone 10 years or 50 years. That's like giving somebody 5 cents and tell them go catch a cab. 5 cents ain't gonna get it. So
the only thing that worries me about that is the only thing that worries me about programs like that. And again, I'm going to be the cynic in all of this. I mean, in theory, it sounds great. In theory, it sounds Like, it would be a powerful tool to help people get set up to be to return successfully. The mechanisms by which there has to be oversight and accountability of that funding so that it is not misused. It is absolutely equitably distributed the way that it is supposed to. It becomes an administrative nightmare, and that's why it will always fail, because they'll say, we don't have the capacity to be able to do this. That's the problem. So what I would propose, and I want to propose this to your audience, and certainly, you know, if anybody wants to reach out to me, you know, Roach, Martine, Nikichi, you all know how to reach me. I would love to see a pilot project developed. And, you know, when I first got in this work, you know, 120 years ago, you know, if you said the word, what about a pilot project? I would have shot you down in all kinds of ways, because pilot projects, no. But a pilot project that looked at taking some of these very strategies that we're talking about now and picking a couple of jurisdictions to say, let's figure out what it would take to do this. And then what are the returns on that investment 6 months, a year down the road? Because then it becomes something that can be scalable and it can be replicated. Because right now, while, you know, those of us that have been systems impacted, we know the fallacies of the system. We know how it's going to be misused. We know how it's going to be weaponized against us. And in fairness, we also know how our people can manipulate it, because, you know, there's both sides of that. But create a strong pilot project that looks at how can we do better? What if we did this? Would it, you know, what would the impact be? Not just on successful reentry, but on the very barriers that people are facing when they're coming home. You mentioned housing. That's critical.
Right.
IDs. If I don't have my ID that I'm supposed to have when I leave, I'm not going to be able to check in, get housing. I'm not going to be able, if I don't have a place to lay my head, how can I get a job? If I can't get a job, I can't afford a place to live. Like, all of those things are very real, but then also the things that are kind of like the intangibles. How did that impact you coming home and reintegrating back into your child or your family's life? You know, what was the impact on them? You know, yeah. How did they respond to that? What was how did they do better in school? That's a metric we can measure. You know, in that time, because you had this little pot of money or whatever it is that we do, then were you able to, because we know that when moms come home, and no disrespect to men, but when moms come home, the first thing somebody says is, here are your kids, take them. You got to go be a mom again. Right. Like, from the minute one, right? And we want to do that.
But you're not in position.
But what if we can't? So would this allowed us to be able to return home? It also sheds a light on the reentry failings that are supposed to start the minute that we hit the gates on day one.
Yes.
I like that idea for pilot project. Who can you recommend that to for implementation?
I don't know, my mind, I just created this on the fly, Nikichi, you know me. But my mind is racing because I'm thinking, how could we do this? How could we get funding to do this? Because we need to be able to employ researchers to be able to help us develop the research modality that we need to do so that it is both transparent, but it is also comprehensive. And it is also, you know, all of the things that we want a research project to encompass.
Okay.
Well, I'm with you. I'm on your team. I'm ready to be involved with you, Kimberly. I'll be calling you.
Oh, good. Good. I mean, I just think this idea is, you know, we think about, you know, all of the multiple layers that we could be looking at. Mm-hmm. One of the other areas that's a concern is our older population. We're not looking at them. So if I've got somebody who's been inside for 35, 45, 55 years, who's coming home, there's no family. So how are we setting them up? And I'm going to call out AARP, and I dare them to call me, because this organization is a national organization advocating for adults over the age of 55, although they keep lowering it to get more and more dollars. But they ain't doing anything for our folks. If it weren't for RAP, you know, and then a handful of, you know, advocates that are doing these programs within their own states, no one's advocating for them. So how are we, you know, ensuring that continuity of communication with them? Who are they calling when they come home? They've been in 50 years.
They don't have the phone numbers. You know, I picked up a guy who did 50 years, and I went to pick him up at the train station. And I said, man, you've been out for a couple of hours. Why didn't you call me? He said, I walked and I couldn't find a phone booth.
Right.
So them guys been gone 40, 50 years. So then I said, man, well, you got some letters. Won't you drop him in the mailbox? He said, I looked again. There's no mailboxes. So the whole world has changed. So these guys don't even know how to relate or make a phone call or send out a letter. So these things are crucial. Mm-hmm. Again, I go back to that 1.2. Let me shut up and take our first caller. Come on, you're on the air. Question call. First caller, please. You're on the air. Question or comment?
Hello?
Hello, question or comment?
Question. Brother Roach, I wanted you to read off that number again. When you said it's in the billions of dollars of this particular agency that's making the money, could you read those numbers again? And Marion Barry had a program with conjugal visits where you could have 20 minutes with your wife. Do you see that in any prison? Is that in any prison in America, that program being implemented? So it will be basically cool down on some of the brothers being raped.
Yes. Go ahead, Kimmy. You want to address that, Kimberly?
I don't know of any prison system that allows conjugal visits.
Nowhere in America.
Not that I'm aware of. If there are, then they're undercover. and I don't know about them.
Okay. I don't know either. I don't know. Well, I'm not going to get into that, but they would push back
on that. And they would, I mean, that's a flat no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a show that we'll do in the future.
Yeah.
Kimmy, another thing is that a lot of men and women who make these calls, the calls are dropped or they interrupt it for whatever reason, for technical reasons, mm-hmm. and you still charge for the full call and you never get reimbursed. And if you try to go through the process of filing a complaint of BP 8, 9, 10, if you're in the federal system, it's like writing a letter from here to the moon and asking Donald Duck to come visit you on Sunday morning. That's the likelihood you have of getting reimbursed. Is there anything in these new rules from the FCC that deal with reimbursement of monies lost and phone calls that are dropped?
Not in this ruling, and I think that it would be hard to do. And here's why. It would be hard to do because the burden of proof of when the call was dropped, there's a technological aspect to that would be difficult to put into play. But then it's how do we know that you didn't say something that, you know, made your family mad and they hung up on you, you know? And then the amount of money that we're talking about is so insignificant in terms of what they're looking at. It's big to us. I mean, every dollar, every penny is important to us, right? Mm-hmm. Not to them. And that's why your thing about asking Donald Duck to come visit you on Sunday morning is actually really true. Hmm. I see that less. It's more of a frustration than anything else.
This is a prime example of why Black families and white families, the poverty gap is so wide. We got mm-hmm. Black men getting paid pennies per hour away from their families and no support when they get out. Mm-hmm. There's so much we need to address. And Kimberly, I'm on your team. We got to make a difference. We got the power. We got to be clear on what we're doing and how we're going to do it.
You know, we got a couple of minutes before we close out. We'll let Kimberly take the last 2 minutes. Stay tuned, folks. We got another hour of the of Crossroads coming to you. Is there a housing crisis for returning citizens with Bishop Andre Gay from the Agape House? Stay tuned. But Kimmy, you got the last 2 minutes to give us some information on how they can get in touch with you or contact you if you need.
Thank you so much. And Roach, Martine, let's make this happen. Phone calls need to be free. Video calls need to be free. Tablets need to be free. Communication needs to be free. And it needs to be encouraged and supported. I am thrilled about the idea of looking at how to make and hold these telecom companies accountable mm-hmm. and transparent but also holding the states and locals to the BOP to be accountable for the commissions that they're getting and what they're doing with it, right? So that's a legislative action that we absolutely need to take. I think looking at pilot programs of how we could use that funding for something different that would enable people to be successfully reintegrating back into their community, at the same time showing that bright light on what's not happening in reentry, I think is going to be crucial. I'm ready to roll up my sleeves. I've been in this space for a long time. I'm ready to work with anybody that wants to get involved with this. But I think that this FCC ruling really does put us in a position, in a much more powerful position than we've ever been, to not only shift the narrative about the importance of this issue and the communication that needs to happen and the impact in terms of trauma and community and families and ameliorating all of that, but also shining a bright light on our cultural and societal denigration and lack of dignity and humanity for the people that are in our care, custody, and control. So I'm ready to roll up my sleeves. You know, I'm ready to work with any of your callers. Let's do it.
Okay, thank you. Our guest has been none other than the dynamic Kimberly Haven of Reproductive Justice Inside. I've been knowing Kimberly for over 25 years, and she's been on the front line fighting. I want to thank you for shedding some light on this topic about the FCC ruling on putting the cap on telephone rates all across the country. We'll delve into this a little further again, because we're talking about the fees. Even though they're putting the cap on the price they can charge, there's still all auxiliary fees that they've attached. They still find ways to increase their profit margin. So we'll delve into this a little further. So I want to thank you, Kimberly Haven, from Reproductive Justice Inside. And lady, keep on keeping on, because you've been on the front line. And I want to tell you, thank you for doing what you're doing and bringing this topic to our listening audience.
Thank you so much.
Kimberly Haven. And we'll close out with, remember that your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Another day has come and in a world where I don't belong, another week has passed me by. It's not because I didn't try. Nobody saw me walking, and nobody heard me talking. Seems like I before they notice me. Another job that I just can't get. A nice apartment the landlord just won't rent. I go to bed but my sleep just won't come. My belly's empty and my brain is numb. Nobody saw me walking, and nobody heard me talking. Seems like I gotta do wrong before they notice me. Seems like I got to do wrong before they notice me. Just won't come. My belly's empty and my brain is numb. Nobody saw me walking, and nobody heard me talking. Seems like I gotta do wrong before they notice me. Yes, I do. We'll be right back.
Tune in Tuesday, August 6th from 6 to 8 p.m. for the